It's a new one and only Deagle Double G.
Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg.
Da 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 da. You know what I'm hopping with the D-R-E.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know the West Coast is back for all you suckers.
What?
Suckers. So put something in there. Put it in there. Yeah. Suck, no.
Top dog, fight them all. Yeah, I'm burning it up. DPGC, you should be turning it up. CPT, LBC, yeah, we hooking back up. And when they bang this in the club, baby, you got to get up. Cuz homies, thug homies, yeah, they giving it up. Low life, yo life, boy, we living it up. Taking chances while we dancing in the party for show. Slip my girl a when she crept in the back door. Chickens looking at me strange, but you know I don't care. Step up in this mother, just a swing in my hair. Trick, quit talking, crip walk if you down with the set. Take a for some grip and take this on the jet. Out of town, put it down for the father of rap. And if you happen to get cracked, trick, shut your trap. Come back, get back, that's the part of success. If you believe in the S, you'll be relieving your stress.
It's the one and only D-R-E.
Dr. Dre, love, buck.
You know I'm mobbing with the D-O-double-G. Straight off them killer streets of CPT. King up the beach, you ride to him in your fleet. Whoop, whoop the bill, rolling on dubs. How you feel? Whoop-de-whoop, what? Dre and Snoop hitting cumblers in the line. With Doc in the back, sipping on yak. Clipping all the amps, tipping through hoods.
What hood?
Compton, Long Beach, Inglewood. South Central out to the west side. It's California love. It's California. Got your boy a gang of pub. I'm on one. I might bell up in the Century Club with my jeans on and my team strong. Get my drink on and my smoke on. Then go home with something to poke on. Locust on for the 2-0-0. Coming real. It's the next episode.
Hold up. Hey. Hold my. You be thinking we saw, we don't play. We gon' rock it till the wheels fall off. Hold up, wait. Oh, my you be acting too bold. Take a seat. Hope you're ready for the next episode. Hey.
Coming back. change me. Throw up it was downright wrong, I tell you. Nobody never gave us nothing. The tough time, it made us something. Different stretch of road, new something to see. Every state on the map, a different something to eat. Gaps and handshakes, it meant nothing for real. Everybody making the killing, man. Showing no feelings, walking off collective pay. It's the way of the world, can't change it. So I guess I'm gonna pray for the world. Sometimes I ask myself, was I made for the world? I scream this to you, and I say to the world. Nappy then, nappy now, nappy for a bit. Knee deep, head over heels in this country.
Thankful for the chance I got to say amen. The Lord done blessed me with his grace. I wish his day would never end. We represent the slum. Where we from, we built it on. Falling short off on these presidents in hard times that going some. Some take a fall without the chance to make it at all. Who would have thought skinny be the one that's making this call? Lord, help me out. Tell me where I went wrong. I'm trying to find the righteous path, although it's never been long. I gotta do it for my son's sake, telling me daddy be strong. We gonna make it through these hard times, even though they go when they come. You're absolutely right, but something happened to me on last Tuesday night. It's plain as day, man, they with this world trade. No, brave ain't the word I'm looking for. You better make it hope when nothing seems to matter. That's when, see, everything can go any which way. Look at me, folks, see the Henny with the J. Front post, chilling broke. Country folk, man, I'm nappy in my way.
Yo, I've been told, but it really don't matter no more. And they wonder why we act this way. Everybody's gonna be okay.
We're gonna be okay.
All my colorful dressing, calmless joint hands. Got to cope with the pressures of being poor, man. Right. Papa taught me in order to survive for no man. Nappy blossom from the roots, henceforth we gone, man. Prophet grew from a juvenile to a grown man. You gotta take responsibility for your own, man. Zoning, too blind to moaning by sunrise. Sometimes I love to hear my woman moaning the song again. Damn, I hope he play this song again. The soul cleansing, the melody just rev my engine. Provide a lot of things, but usually just appending my ligaments. Searching for Benjamin. All my folks locked in the sentiments, and it don't make any sense.
Why?
Children are sentencing, broadcasting from the slums. That's why I'm writing these sentences along my income. Why? Go ahead, finish.
All my life I've been told, but it really don't matter no more.
The good thing I can say is that, you know, for me, it
dealing with death is never easy. When someone you care about and you really love them, it is so hard to know that they've died. It could be a mom, a brother, a sister, a pet, someone you know. When someone you care about dies, it's often like, why did it happen? You know, I understand we all die at some point, but why my brother, my sister, my cousin, my friend, my uncle? Why did someone I care about have to be taken? And oftentimes there is no clear answer. If they were young, there's no, you know, reason that someone left this earth too early. But I want to tell you that you have a choice. My wife is an amazing, beautiful person. She has a career as a physician assistant. She helps many people struggling with cancer and other problems. And she's a wonderful wife, and she's a great mother to my daughter, and she is a great, great person. But she sadly has a mother who passed away very early. Her mother had a horrible condition due to smoking cigarettes for many years, and it really made her very sick. She had to be on oxygen and breathing things, and she eventually died. And it was so sad for my wife to lose her mom. She would talk to her mom 4 or 5 times every day. They were best friends. In fact, when we had my daughter, my mother-in-law was in the delivery room with us. She watched as my wife gave birth, and they shared that amazing moment. So you can just imagine how painful and hard it was for my wife to lose her mother. And my wife was very young. She was just in her early 30s. But here's the thing. She decided to deal with the pain. She went and she goes to a therapist. She found support. She knew that she needed to face what she was feeling. If you lose someone and you just forget about it and you try to say, oh, I'll get better, you're going to have pain forever. If you go and you deal with it, it gets better. She went to a therapist every week, and they worked on it, and they talked about it. And even when she gets upset, you know, in the present time, she goes and she deals with it. And listen, she misses her mom more than anything. My wife, if she could do anything, she probably would bring her mom back and give her help again. But the reality is she's no longer here in this form, and my wife had to deal with it. And instead of getting into addictions and throwing away the family that she's built, she decided to deal with her pain and her hurt. And today she's doing well. We're having another baby. She's doing wonderfully. She has a great job. We're happily married. We have another daughter who's doing great. So the point is, I hope if you lose someone close to you, you know that there is hope and encouragement. And one of the things, too, is not facing it on your own. We do a coaching service, a life coaching service by phone and by Skype, where we'll work with you and we'll give you encouragement and support, and we'll help you, you know, to know that you can handle what you're facing. And I also, in our community, we do uplifting articles and inspiration to give you a positive outlook so that you can handle what happens. Please see our website. It's called willlisten.com, and willlisten.com, willlisten.com. I'm really sorry if you lost someone close to you, and I'm sure wherever they are in heaven, they're watching all of you, but please know if you'll deal with it and get yourself healthy, you can handle this loss. And I wish there was an answer to why people leave us, but it does happen. And if you deal with it, I'm sure those that you love would be happy that you're finding positivity and peace. Thanks so much for watching this, and I wish you the best.
Who emailed me a couple days ago to talk about someone close to her that had died. As you guys know, my mother died. It's been about 3.5 years. It's almost, I guess it'll be 4 years in December. And so I've blogged a lot about it, obviously, and, you know, I've been very open with it because I think that, well, number one, that's just my personality, but number two, you know, it helped me to kind of get those feelings out. And so I found it really gratifying that over the years I've had people reach out to me and email me and say that my writing about my mom and, you know, thinking about death and talking about sort of the stages that I went through afterward has really helped them. So that made me feel really good. And I got this email from someone who had emailed me previously talking about someone that died that was close to her. And so I just wanted to send this you know, video missive to you and to anyone who has lost someone recently or is just kind of confused because you're going through the grieving process. When my mom died, someone told me a few months later, they were like, you need to go to therapy right now because for about a year, everyone's going to care. For a few months, everyone's going to care. And then after the year mark, people just sort of stop caring. You know, it's still obviously a big deal, but they're like, really? You're still that upset about it? And that sounds incredibly callous, but it's true. That's how people behave with me. And people I know that have had, you know, others that have died, you know, that were really, really, really close to them. Not just, you know, not diminishing anyone's grief, but, you know, when it's really like one of the people in your lives. I've talked to some people about that, and they've said that they've experienced the same thing, where people have been like, oh, yeah, of course you're sad, but, you know, oh, what's going on? And, you know, they really just kind of, they minimize your grief. And so I found that to be true, where, you know, I kind of had a year, there was a year on the clock, and then after a year, it was just sort of like, time's up, you know, you got to get back to basics. And so, you know, Jay, I know that you are just kind of hitting the year mark, and you said that things have been really difficult recently. And, you know, for a year, you sort of felt like you were free, and it was like there was a new beginning, a fresh start. And that's exactly how I felt after my mom died. And then to be perfectly honest, the second year, I was an absolute mess. I was an utter wreck. And I was just all over the place and sort of depressed and, you know, in retrospect, definitely drinking way too much and, you know, just really not being my best self. But I was doing all I really knew how to do. And I look back now and, you know, I say thank God that that's sort of a few years behind me. But I think that, you know, that time after the first year, so after you sort of hit the 12-year mark, that next year it really is difficult because people tend to go away. Your support system is sort of not there anymore. And you feel really lonely and you feel angry and you feel confused. And, you know, I know I was having like panic attacks where I would go to bed and I was in the room when my mom died. And so I would think about her dying and I would relive the moment that she died over and over. And, you know, it made me feel sort of panicked. And then I would start thinking about my own death and thinking about what death would be like and thinking about, oh, this and that, whatever, whatever, you know. And so just go down this rabbit hole of like, oh, craziness. And so, you know, I actually see a therapist now, which I love her. She's amazing. But her name is Dr. Helen Landon, by the way. So I recommend Google her if you're in Santa Monica. Check her out. She's great. I wish that I had gone to see a therapist immediately after my mom, like I had been advised to, because it would have been really, really helpful for me. And so, you know, Jay, I would say to you, definitely I think there's no shame in therapy. You're basically just paying someone to talk to them, and they might, you know, point out helpful things for you. But for me, it's really akin to writing in a journal, where it's just kind of having someone to bounce ideas off of. And you get all of the crap in your head out, and as you hear yourself saying it, it starts to become clear to you, and you start to realize things. And so that's why I blogged, like I said, after my mom died. And while she was dying, because it was really helpful for me to just get it out. And then beyond that, I think don't be afraid to ask your friends for help. They probably don't realize how sad you are and how sad it is. I have some friends that have lost parents recently, and I think about them, and I don't even reach out sometimes. In some cases, because they're just acquaintances, and I don't feel comfortable, and I feel like they probably don't want that barrier crossed. But in other cases, you know, I'm just living my life, and I'm doing my thing, and I'm worrying about my problems and my issues. And then, you know, it'll occur to me a couple months later, like, oh, crap, I should check in on her and see how she's doing. And so I know that my friends have had those same intentions toward me, and I'm sure that your friends, you know, have those same intentions toward you. But sometimes you just kind of need to jab them and poke them and remind them, because, you know, everyone's in their own little bubble, and people just sometimes forget that other people are hurting. So the good thing I can say is that, you know, for me at least, there was light at the end of the tunnel. I still miss my mom tremendously. There are photos of her all over my room. But it's not, you know, life does go on, to be perfectly honest. Life goes on, and I think that we're a death-denying society, and so that's why death can be so scary and so depressing. But death is part of life, you know, and death is not quite so hidden in other cultures, which is not to say that it's not a big deal, but I think that, you know, Westerners, and then particularly Americans, we approach death in this really bad way, this really sort of scary, awful way. And we kind of shove it under the carpet and pretend that it doesn't exist. And that's, you know, not very helpful. Yeah, as for me, I can say that I'm super happy now, you know, and life is good. And my mother dying, you know, on a purely selfish level, it really helped coalesce what I want. I had a couple years of kind of wading through the crap and figuring it out and getting my head on straight. But the person that I am today in 2012, at 31 and, you know, half, 31 and three-quarters years old, is very different than who I was when I was 28 when my mother died. And I think a large part of that is directly because of her death. And so I've grown tremendously as a person. I've been open to growing, and I've totally changed what I want out of life. Before, I had zero interest in getting married or having kids, like zero. And after she died, I realized, you know, family is really important to me, and I do want to start a family. And I want my dad to be around to see my kids, you know, and to hopefully see me get married and all of that, because my mom didn't make it, you know, I didn't do it in time. So, you know, I think that 3.5-4 years on, it's not to say that I don't think about it, but it's thankfully, like, not as big of a deal as it was, you know, at the 1-year mark. So, you know, keep on chugging and, you know that there are people out there that love you, and people that are thinking of you, even if they don't tell you they're thinking of you. And, you know, just let yourself, give yourself permission to be crazy right now. Give yourself permission to sort of work through all of the stuff and to maybe not be your best self and to maybe be a little selfish and to be a little sad or to be this or that. Just as long as you know in the back of your mind, really know it in your heart that it's going to get better and that you are going to get through it and that you have to sort of, you know, go through all this crap to rebuild and to be a better person. So I'm thinking of you. I don't even know you, but I'm thinking of you. I'm sending you hugs. I'm really sad. I wish that that person were still there for you. That's it. Thanks for watching. Sending hugs and kisses your way. And bye.
Well, greetings to all of our beloved BTR family, and welcome to another Monday edition of Let's Talk with Mr. Talk, Eric Jackson. He won't be joining us today, so I hope you guys don't mind me filling in temporarily. This is Cloud Nation broadcasting live and direct. And today's show, as you might have already figured out, is entitled Death, Coping, Mourning, Dealing with the Loss of a Loved One. So if you guys have something on your mind regarding this topic and you want to chime in at some point, don't hesitate to call in at 347-838-8622 and then press number 1, which will notify me that you want to chime in on this particular topic. Otherwise, I'll assume that you're just listening. And so I brought up this particular topic because, as you can hear, as you might have heard from some of the recordings, you know, death is just one of those things that, although you know it will eventually come, it's hard to prepare for it in some ways. You know, whether you lose someone to natural causes, the natural causes of aging, or a disease like heart condition, diabetes, blood pressures, or self-inflicted illnesses like drug addiction and alcoholism, terminal illnesses like cancer, or even sexually transmitted diseases like AIDS, or even senseless acts of violence like gun violence or domestic violence, for example. All of these things are contributing factors to death in some way, shape, or form. And when someone dies, oftentimes there are some who love them who are impacted by that, and they go through a mourning and a coping process. And I think it's a serious discussion because many of us have lost close loved ones and friends. And how we mourn and deal with death may vary, but grieving is a process. And dealing with the difficulty of navigating through grief can challenge us, especially when you feel alone. And there is also this assumption by some that grieving should last for a specific length of time, you know, by those who are on the outside looking in. And it's easy to, you know, be offended by people who make comments like, well, you know, they're in a better place, or, wow, you're still grieving over that, or comments like, I thought that happened years ago. So as you heard from the recording, there are many people who just understand grieving. They just don't understand the process of mourning. And, you know, I've always been a believer, if what you say or what you have to say isn't appropriate for that particular situation, you know, it's better not to say anything at all. Something like, trying to support someone if you need something, anything, call them. You know, simple things like that may help. But I want to hear from you guys and how you've encountered dealing with this coping and mourning process, dealing with mourning the loss of a loved one, and how you, not only how you dealt with it, but how you navigated through this process of grieving while encountering individuals who may not understand and may not know how to respond to you in an appropriate way, and in many cases may even offend you by their actions or statements. Because as you heard from the recording, you know, there's that moment where, that bereaving moment where people are, you know, contacting you and surrounding you with love and all that and affection. You know, but that passes. That changes. That doesn't continue. Now, I have one caller who has their hand up, so I'm going to bring them in right now. Caller, your mic is open.
Hi, this is Michelle.
Hey, how you doing? Yes,
pretty
I can
good.
Hear you.
Okay, good.
Good.
I just wanted to mention that there's no right or wrong way to how a person grieves, and there's no set amount of time. It's each individual is different, and you have to remember that you have to be kind of careful when, if, you know, talking to someone about their grief, because you really don't know unless you've been down that path, and that some people, when they go through grief, they want to mask the pain because it's just too traumatic for them. But you got to remember, you got to take time to deal with the grief, and don't put it aside. Don't postpone dealing with it, or it's only going to make it worse. That's all I really got to say about that.
Oh, no, that was appreciated. Thanks for your input so far. And so for you, if I can ask this question, have you ever encountered you know, a moment like that where someone may have maybe offended you, or may, because of their lack of understanding of the mourning and the grieving process, may have just, you know, said all the wrong things at the wrong time during that process for you personally?
Yes. I've definitely been affected by grief. In 96, my stepmom and my dad, they both died of murder-suicide, and being the oldest child, I had to handle their estate, and it was just really hard, because with handling their estate and it being a murder-suicide, there were people, you know, at the funeral saying, well, do you bury them together, or don't you bury them together, and, you know, at the cemetery, and that was really hard. And then also, I worked in the same beauty salon that my stepmom worked in, and we were best friends, and I would be in the back mixing up hair color for someone, and I could hear the customers talk about, can you believe her father did that, and just saying things, and they didn't even realize that I could hear them, you know, and it was really hard there for a while. But some of the best advice I think I was told was just to try to be the best person you could be every day, so that maybe one day you'll see him again in heaven or in the afterlife or whatever you believe in. But there were times when I just didn't think I could deal with it, and, you know, I wanted to mask the pain, but thank goodness that I was able to not let that go on too long. But, and when I did, you know, come to terms with it, it made it harder. So it made it harder to deal with, and so what I'm saying is, make sure you deal with it right away and don't put it off too. And that's all I have to say.
First, I wanted to give my condolences for your loss to the, you know, that. Just you expressing that, we appreciate you, you know, just sharing your story, and I think that's just yet another example of what, you know, the question I was asking, you know, people, you know, making inappropriate comments and their lack of understanding the whole process, the, you know, not putting themselves in the shoes of the griever, you know, of the person who is going through the mourning process, and it seems to be a norm for a lot of people, where they have a hard time finding the type of sympathy, the type of compassion, the type of empathy from others, you know, when they encounter great losses such as that. And, you know, I think it speaks to, you know, our I guess our inability to be comfortable with being open and expressing certain things with certain people. I think those types of experiences can, if allowed, be, you know, things that create barriers from social encounter, social interaction, social relationships, because of, you know, moments like that, moments when people, instead of using their wit and deciding if what I have to say right now is inappropriate, maybe I should just not say anything until I fully get a grasp on what's going on, and until I can contribute in a helpful way.
I remember getting a sympathy card that said, basically, you sometimes there's nothing you can say. Just they wanted me to know that they was there for me, but they didn't really have any words to express, you know, what they didn't have anything to say, and that was appreciated, really. That was, I mean, because sometimes it's better just don't say anything at all. But, and I thought that was a good sympathy card. I mean, just to let a person know that they're thinking of you, but not to really carry on and elaborate too much.
No, I totally agree, and I think, you know, I think back on when I was a 12-year-old kid, and one of my best friend at the time lost him to leukemia right before he turned to the tender age of 13, and I can remember vividly, you know, the experiences that he dealt with, his family dealt with, and that whole process of being in and out of hospitals, you know, being limited on, you know, what you can do physically, and also knowing that there's a possibility that if this bone marrow transplant surgery goes wrong, you know, this just might be it for you. And so you know, there are people who their loved ones get a chance to watch, you know, and be around them while they're going through this process before they pass away, knowing that, you know, pretty much that they're walking into to death's door, I guess that's the way you could put it. You know, and trying to put yourself in their shoes, thinking about you know, their mindset at that point, knowing that this for them just is most likely will be it for them, and, you know, versus someone who doesn't know that they're gonna walk away from, you know, lose their life in senseless violence in situations where, you know, a person had no idea that person was going to die. So I think about your situation, you know, that's not a situation that you can typically prepare for. I also think about people who know that their family members who are terminally ill, although it's a different part, you know, type of mourning, they have a heads up on this might be it. And then you have the encounters of the senseless violence, senseless acts of violence, where people had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. That, you know, that surprise, this incident happened, and then when the moment that you find out it actually happened, that roller coaster of emotions a person has to deal with before they even get to the grieving process.
Right.
And, yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was getting ready to listen.
First off, I was a little nervous at first. Thank goodness I was starting to relax. But it's when something like this happens, it's really important that the family come together instead of separating, because there is nothing like this that can, you know, bring out greed and ugliness out of people, you know, fighting over money or just stupid little things, quilts and guns and all that kind of thing, things that maybe you inherit or whatever. But it is hard. It's always a surprise when somebody dies, regardless whether even if they know they're dying, it's a shock because once they're gone, it's forever. I mean, you're never going to see them again, and it's just hard. I mean, I agree with you, but it's a shock.
And I think you just touched on some real good points. So earlier in the discussion, I listened to you, and one of the things you talked about was masking the pain, and another one was handling the estate. And I want to touch on those two. I want to start with handling the estates first, since you mentioned how families deal with death and the estates in the financial component, how the money and the valuables and the material assets are divvied up, and how that can bring out such a ugly side of family, you know, in many cases where you really get a chance to see people for who they are for the first time, are oftentimes in funerals, where people kind of, put into all these theatrics and this dramatic act for people that when they were alive, these people showed a totally different type of, behavior towards those people when they were living. But then they put these performances on as though they loved them and all this stuff. And so, for one who, as a person who's dealt with that process with the estates and divvying up the money and the material assets, how was that for you in particular when it came to, discovering how people would act out?
It was real hard because me and my stepmom were best friends, and my mom and dad, they were going through, I always call her my mom because she practically raised me, but they were going through a divorce, and then there was the case of my younger brother and sister. My sister was 8, and my brother was like 12, and it was hard because after they died, they each got a little over $1,000 a month for Social Security. So not only did you have to, I had to deal with that, I had to deal with their estate. My stepmom had the bee shop. She owned part of the business. And then the life insurance money and all that. Well, since I was executor, my grandparents, we still don't talk to this day. They my grandma and my grandpa actually have passed on, but some of the other family members I don't talk to still to this day because, I don't know if it's because my grandparents were on a fixed income and that's why they were so hell-bent on getting custody of the kids, but, they really put us through hell trying to get custody, or trying to get control of the estate and trying to get custody of the kids. And eventually they did get custody of the kids, and that was okay, but it did get ugly. We had to go through mediators, and a lot of money was spent on attorney where if we could have settled it peacefully, it would have saved a lot of money. And my grandparents didn't seem to understand that since they were going, they were married, but they were going through a divorce, they had a lot of bills that they weren't aware of. And because they were, they would feel guilty about going through the divorce because they'd break up and get back together. And, my dad being an alcoholic, it was kind of, rough. And the relationship wasn't real stable. But they would do things for the kids to spoil them because to make up for them going through the divorce, like they'd buy my brother a new four-wheeler and my sister a baby colt horse or whatever. And so then they just, created more bills. And so when they died, you know, nobody could do anything with the money or anything. You know, we had to take all their stuff to auction, which was really, really hard, sell the house and all that to pay for these bills. I mean, and I was only doing what the attorney was recommending, but, you know, some other people in the family just felt like I wasn't doing it fast enough or I wasn't doing it right, and I was doing it as fast as I could. But and it was hard. I think one of the hardest days I had was the day that I had to sell their house and I had to sign their names. That was really, really hard, that day that I had to sign their names to sell their house.
Wow. And you know, that those are the things that that really stand out to me, you know. And I think about, you know, when you lose someone as close as your parents, for example, and, you know, those are the types of losses that you never totally get over. You know, you may go through with, I guess, the technical term or the clinically defined version of what mourning may be, but there are always those moments that are constant reminders of that void, I personally believe, when you lose people who are very dear and close and near to your heart. And I think that
right.
There are, you know, that there are so many day in and day out instances that continue to remind you of that void, whether it's other people who may have those people in their lives, how they treat those people in their lives. And, of course, there's those collective memories that you share, you have, whether it's a song or a movie or a place
right.
in the city.
That's
that
right.
You go
with
to.
My brother. I'm sorry. That's like with my brother.
No, go ahead.
That's okay. We had to go to a counselor, and the counselor recommended that, you know, for the holidays, Christmas and Thanksgiving, we had to start making our own traditions because it was so painful putting up a Christmas tree when before in the past you always did it with everything just reminds you of them. And I don't know about most people, but with myself, I would ask for my stepmom for advice or how to hang wallpaper, or, you know, just small things like that. And when they're gone, it's you don't have them to ask anymore. And it just sometimes it makes it hard just to make, you know, decisions because you don't have that person to ask for advice anymore. And also, you know, with different stages of your life, going through grief is hard too because when I went through that, I was a lot younger, and that I might have done things different had I been older and wiser, you know. But that's why you really need your family to kind of support you and stick together instead of pull apart. Because, for instance, there was a time when my little sister was running a fever, and you know, I wasn't sure what to do. And if my grandparents, instead of fighting me, would have, you know, been available for me to reach out to instead of, you know, being hateful and not being supportive, it would have been nice to be able to call them and say, hey, what do I do about this? Or, you know, maybe got their input more had they been more supportive. It all worked out.
Oh, man, that's great input. Caller, your mic is open, and if anyone wants to call in and chime in on this particular topic, remember the number is 347-838-8622. Press button number 1 if you want to talk, and we'll open the mic up for you. Go ahead, caller. We opened up the mic for you. I'm not sure if they stepped away for a second, but they pressed the one, you know, button number 1. So we opened up the mic for them. So whenever they're ready, they can hop back into the discussion. So while we're waiting for that, I want to get back to the mask and the pain portion. Now as I could speak, you know, from my own experience, I know when I lost my aunt, my close and dear aunt, it was actually in a car accident, and she was already dealing with cancer at the moment, and we were in a horrific car accident where she literally flew out of the back of the window with a couple of her grands, who happened to not have any scratches after the accident, which was definitely a good thing. But her death was because of the internal bleeding that was created by, I guess, from her flying out of the back of the car. It was a minivan. And so I remember, you know, the process, the estate's process, and how she had two children at the time, a son and a daughter, and she also had grandkids from both kids, and a husband who was abusive and very cynical. And I remember the process of divvying up the estate, but how each person, family member, tried to mask the pain in comparison to others who were just, you know, flat out open, and the pain was very visible. But all of us grieved, had, you know, used our grieving process differently, and some of us, you know, attempted to mask it, attempted to hide some of that pain, because, you know, you had adults, elders, who wanted to be, I guess, be perceived as stronger in front of the kids, the younger people. So I'm guessing they had to kind of pull it together, so to speak, in order to orchestrate and organize and you know, put everything together for the funeral and for that arrangement, and make sure that they dealt with all the dotting of the T's and crossing the I's, like you said, dealing with the insurance and dealing with you know, the arrangements of caskets, all those things that factor in to losing a loved one. Even dealing with the hospital process, because everyone who was in the car accident were in the hospital, so you had, which was out of state, so they had to, you know, orchestrate, send different people to see about each loved one who was in the hospital and in a totally different state. They had to arrange transportation to bring those who could leave the hospital home to go to the funeral. Some of us were too battered and bruised to attend. Well, me personally, I couldn't go. I was too banged up at that time. But most of the family was able to attend. And so I think about, you know, that whole process of like you said, masking the pain, and why some people feel as though they have to mask that pain, depending on what social setting they're in. You know, because, for example, if you're working, typically people don't consider it, you know, professional, so to speak, to deal with grieving in the workplace. They feel like if you're grieving, you need, don't come in, so to speak. And so knowing all that and thinking about, you know, what you dealt with from a, you know, a person who had to take over business and had to deal with, you know, your siblings. So it was a lot of different hats you had to work, you had to navigate through at the same time. How were you able to balance all those things? And for you, what was masking the pain for you during that process?
Wow, I had support from my husband. That really helped out a lot with the kids. With the beauty business, it was hard because I had to take on her customers and my customers both. So I had to work a lot of hours, so thank goodness my husband was there to help with the kids. But I don't know that I did such a good job. It was such a busy time. I would never want to have to go through that again. Or I don't even want to be the executor of an estate ever again because of it. That's why it's so very important for the family to stick together and, you know, not be hateful with each other and be positive for each other and supportive. And as far as the mask and the pain, I was young, and after a while, it just got to be so much pressure. I started partying too much, things like that, and that's what I meant by, you know, I just wanted to not cry anymore because I was so sick of crying. I just needed a break from crying and being sad and depressed, and I took the easy way out for a while, and then eventually, thank goodness, I was able to deal with it, but it made it really hard when it did come time to deal with it.
Wow. I want to look at an article from someone who is considered to be a professional, I believe, in the grieving department, I guess. And so they have a list of what they consider, you know, the physical, mental, and the emotional, I guess, symbols of grief. And they have something called the five stages of grief. And I'm not sure if you've heard about these stages, this five stages of grief. I know it was new to me when I started to look it up. So I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's just something I came across. So I just wanted to look at it and talk about it and just kind of analyze it for a second and see if anything resonated. So I have heard of the five stages of grief.
They're right on it. the people.
Oh, they're right on it.
They're right okay. on it, pretty much. At least for me, they were.
And so this one is from a book actually that was written in 1969. Wow, and it's called On Death and Dying. And I believe the writer was is Elizabeth Kubler Ross. Yeah, and according to Ms. Ross, she says that in the five stages of grief, she talks about denial, which is, it says that this stage is often experienced as a state of shock. You may feel numb, disoriented, or overwhelmed. Some report a trance-like state or a sense of unreality. Though confusing, these feelings help us to slowly come to terms with the reality of the loss rather than dealing with all of our emotions up front. That's one. Her second one is anger. She says that anger can be directed at anyone who you feel has blame in your loss. You might feel anger toward your family and friends, your loved one who has passed, or the doctors who are unable to save them. You may also be angry with yourself or the world. This anger is a manifestation of the pain of your loss. It can be understood as a measure of your love for the person. And the last three are bargaining, depression, and acceptance. Bargaining is, she says, that you may find yourself asking what if questions, thinking about what could have been done to save your loved one, and perhaps bargaining with God or the world. If I could have just one more day with them. Bargaining is often accompanied by guilt. This is basically our way of negotiating with the hurt and pain of loss. Depression deals with, and sadness are the most recognizable, commonly accepted symptoms of grief. Yet all too often, grieving persons are expected to snap out of it and act normal. It's important to understand that after the loss of a loved one, depression is a perfectly normal emotional response. During this stage, you will likely withdraw from normal activities and feel as if you are in a fog of sadness. You may find it difficult to go on without that person in your life. And last is acceptance. It says this is the point where we accept our new reality, one in which our loved one is no longer present. Acceptance does not necessarily mean that you're okay with your situation. It simply means you recognize that the person is indeed gone, that your situation has changed. Acceptance is also when we begin to pick up the pieces and recognize our lives to fit with this new reality. So I want to look at denial first because I think it was I agree with you. I think these are very, very relevant, you know, examples of some of the things that you deal with. And so, you know, they talk about, you know, denying, you know, that state of shock, that numb and disorientated and overwhelmed feeling, you know, that trance-like stare or that sense of unreality. Can you, for you personally, I'll start with myself. I know that the you know, the moment that I was told about both my aunt and my best friend as a kid, you know, it was, for me, it was hard to grasp that as a reality, personally. You know, I felt like it was like they said, it was a trance-like state, so to speak, because the very idea of those two individuals not being here, you know, or a part of my life, it just didn't seem realistic, I guess. I guess that's the way I could put it. It didn't, so it had to set in for me. And I just opened up the call that we just called back in. I opened up your mic as well, just letting you know. So anyone could chime in on that.
It does put you in a trance-like state. I remember I would dream that they were on vacation and they had just come back. And to this day, sometimes I have dreams that, you know, everything, they're back and everything's fine, and in my dreams, I'm, you know, asking them, what happened? I thought this and that happened, you know, trying to make sense of it. But yeah, you don't want to, you want to be in denial. You don't really want to believe it, and you kind of sometimes go through them. You just go through the motions. Your body goes through the motions, but you're not really there because you're just so hurt inside.
Oh, that's good. And I'm still waiting on the other caller to see if they wanted to participate, because I know they've pressed the button number one. Did you want to chime in as well, caller?
I gotta tell you, you got the most boring show on Blog Talk. I almost passed out.
Oh, I know who that is. I had to figure out who it was at first. I thought it was the actual participant of the show. It was that's actually one of the people that likes to troll for different shows. So, but yeah, but back to what you were saying regarding the topic, I totally agree. I agree that, you know, when you're dealing with the loss of a loved one, you know, it can be challenging. To even embrace that as a reality, the fact that you've lost someone close to you, most of us don't want to believe that. You know, you want that to be some type of, you want it to be a lie, because, I mean, who really wants to lose people that they care about? I personally don't think people want to lose anyone that they love or care about. You know, I I mean, I think that's part of you loving that person and caring about them, right? You know?
It goes back to being in shock to, I mean, with my situation, it was hard because I could not believe that. I felt like that wasn't my dad that did that. And to this day, that's kind of how I look at it. That wasn't my dad that did that. That was, you know, somebody else. Because my dad was in, he was a respectful man, and he would have never done something like that. That wasn't him. That's not how he brought me up, and that's not how he thought on a day-to-day basis. But while I am talking about that, I did want to mention, though, as far as people saying hateful things, if I could just go back to that for just a second. Sometimes people would say things like, you know, regarding him, you know, murdering my stepmom, they would say mean things, but not understanding, though, regardless of what he did, that was still my father, and I didn't appreciate people saying mean things about him, because even though it was just kind of like I could talk bad about him, but I'd be damned if someone else did, and that was real hard to deal with as far as people making comments about him, too. I didn't mean to get back off the subject, but I just wanted to touch base on that while I remembered. Okay, I'm done.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. And I agree that, you know, when we were talking about earlier in the show, you know, when your input has no positive value, and I think that makes sense in a lot of cases, but particularly when you deal with people who are going through a process of mourning and grieving, I really don't believe that you should allow your negative ideas to distributed into the universe, so to speak, because you should understand that negative energy is already in the air. It's already in the atmosphere, you know, and so why add to the negativity? If you can't add positivity, try to, you know, bring the balance back of positive energy. You know, I personally feel like don't add an inappropriate comment. You know, when people make inappropriate comments and statements, it's typically people who have never been in that situation. And
right.
And I think even when you haven't experienced the exact same situation, it's so key to have that ability to be empathetic and to have compassion, because if you can be empathetic, if you can have compassion for someone else, I think it makes it so much easier to to respond appropriately, or to not in an appropriate response in that case would have most likely been to not respond at all. You know, not
right.
to say anything, because what they said was obviously inappropriate, and so I look at that, and that brings up anger. To me, you know, that in the stages of grief, you think about anger, because you know you may already, as a griever, may already be dealing with anger, whether it's towards your loved one, whether it's towards a deity, or the lack of a deity, or whatever the situation is, people who were in connection, people who created anything that has something to do with the incident in the first place. There are so many areas in which that anger could be channeled, but now you have to deal with the added component, an added piece of anger, because now you have this inappropriate contribution from someone else or others, because it doesn't have to just be one person. And so that alone, all those things added on, can be, you know, heavy and weighted. And I think about people who, you know, aren't as fortunate as some of us who may have, you know, some loved one or at least one or two. There are those, you know, who may be homeless, for example, and in some cases, with some people who are homeless, if they lose someone, you know, they may not have a support system at all. Not one or two people to connect with, because typically people who are homeless don't have relationships with anybody. I mean, you know, because if you had a close relationship with family, typically you'd probably have some, you know, some connection to that family member in some way, some shape, or form. So I think about, you know, those people as well, and just this the world that we live in, and how that support system, in a utopia, people would probably, you know, we wish that there was this broad community of support around the world, you know, that support would find you everywhere. You know, that would be the perfect situation, you know, in the perfect world. But in reality, it seems like, and it could just be me, but it seems like empathy, compassion for others is a lot far-pressed, it seems like it's more outside of the norm, more so now probably than ever before. And as time continues to move on, it seems like, to me, this is just my opinion, compassion and empathy is a fleeting trait, is a characteristic, moving closer and closer to the grave, so to speak, and there's no pun intended with that, but closer and closer, because it seems like there's a lot less of it out there in the universe than it maybe in the past, where there were more of community oriented support mechanisms, where more people would embrace others no matter what type of loss it was. You know, someone lost someone, it was that simple.
Right.
And
if someone's not experienced loss, they don't really understand that when you lose somebody really close to you, it's kind of like someone sticking a knife inside of you and twisting it, but it's, you know, like an invisible knife and twisting it, and it just hurts so bad. I mean, I would say going through that grief was probably the hardest thing I ever done, as far as, you know, being upset and being hurt, and maybe the second one being love, you know, being someone breaking up with you, or, you know, your first love. You know, sometimes that can be real traumatic. It was for me, and that would be second. But unless, you know, before all that happened, I didn't really know I hadn't experienced any grief. So, you know, that's why I say too, you don't know until you've walked in that person's shoes what you might or might not do. So until someone's dealt with it, they don't really understand how hurtful and how hard it is. And, you know, it's really kind of a shame, I guess, because usually those are the people that make the comments and all that. And all those steps that you're mentioning, you do go through all those with the anger and all that.
Yeah, indeed. And I think also about isolation, because that was connected to, I didn't mention it, but I see that was connected to the denial. And when I think about, you know, isolating yourself from, you know, others or certain social settings, you know, I guess it's the in some cases, it's because of those negative encounters, like you said. You know, when you come in, you encounter situations where people just respond inappropriately. And so, you know, a person would typically try to, like you said, mask the pain and find other ways to cope or to use to distract themselves, like a distraction from that moment. So I look at a part of that denial process being, like you said, you used an example of the club, but you know, you have people who will do like you said, party and do a variety of different activities, whether it's working a lot of hours or whatever it is, but trying to make sure their time is consumed by a variety of different things, eliminating idle time, because idle time is quiet time, and quiet time is time to think and meditate and reflect on what has occurred. And so sometimes people may isolate themselves from specific situations where they might have to have discussions that will lead to those inappropriate discussions or environments where people know them and know their situation, who might comment on it in an appropriate way. And so they may take themselves outside of that environment and then replace that environment with another one in order to avoid, you know, the inappropriate scenarios. And I look at that as a form of isolation. What's your thoughts on that?
I agree with and some of that too, like, I couldn't imagine the loss of a small child. That would be really hard. It would make you really want to, you know, ask why. Of course, you do that with any death, but a child, I mean, that's got to be the worst. And at times you want to lose your faith because of being angry, God, or upset. And not just when I was saying I was partying, that not necessarily going to the club, but just, you know, partaking in, like, you know, smoking too much or different things like that, doing drugs or whatever. It's something to keep you from crying so much, or keep you going, keep you moving ahead without just being upset all the time, so that you could get, you know, carry on, get things done or whatever. Then that takes you down a totally a wrong road, obviously.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think about that, you know, the bargaining component when you brought that up, and you know, make this not happen, and in return I will do this, you know, and I think that really comes in for people who, in some cases, where people are dealing with terminally ill family members, and you know, they already know that this person may pass away soon, because it's, you know, at this point the physicians have already decided that it's pretty much over. And, you know, in your mind you're still thinking, well, until that happens, you know, there's still time. And so I think about that bargaining process for when, you know, during the time and period when someone is actually still present. But then I also start to think about, you know, bargaining in the sense of when someone has passed away, and they defined it as, you know, asking yourself, you know, that question, that the what if questions, and thinking about what could have been done to save your loved one, and perhaps, you know, bargaining with God or the world. And so, you know, I think that the bargaining process in my opinion, that can be an ongoing process even after the, I guess, what I call the assumed grieving period, because, like I said, there's typically a time frame that some people base grieving on. Like, after this period, it's over. What are your thoughts on, you know, that bargaining process, even, you know, after maybe years or a few years have passed, when people are still thinking about the what ifs?
I just, you know, I did spend a lot of time, you know, grieving over everything and dealing with that, because right after that, pretty much like that happened in 96, and then in 2002, my sister passed away. She was only 17, and that just made it all come back to life, kind of, you could say, you know, come back to me all over again, going to the funeral home and all that. And then the fact she was so young, that was hard too. But now since time's passed, I think about the good times, you know. It is important when people are alive that you share moments where you laugh together, you could say. When you laugh together, you always feel like a special bond with someone. And, you know, it's good to think back at the times when maybe you went sledding in the wintertime, or your most favorite Christmas, or, you know, special moments that you had together, maybe a certain birthday or something. But instead of, you know, you try to think about those things instead of the heartache that you went through dealing with the funeral and all that. And try to have a special place to go to, I guess, maybe in your mind or whatever, when later on when you're trying to, when you think about then. But even today, it's still hard to, for instance, like I have, you know, a room in my house where I store things. And when I go in that room, if I have to, you know, if I come across paperwork, like their death certificates and different things like that, it's sometimes I just have to walk out of the room because it's just too hard to deal with still to this day. But it gets easier, but not all the way easier. Easy. It's just maybe easier to deal with later on. So, I mean, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but you just kind of have to keep positive, I guess, in your thoughts, and just remember to be the best person you can be every day, so that maybe you'll see him again in the afterlife or in heaven or whatever.
And I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought up the, the positive perspective on this, because that's where we wanted to get to before the show ends. And so, you said something that was key, and I'm taking mental notes, so I'm going to continue to throw these out there. And so one of the things you brought up was thinking about, you know, the good times and the good memories, but also what I got from that is also celebrating, you know, the legacy of a loved one. Now, I heard an interesting thing in different places, one of which was from Dame Dash when he had this temporary reality show. And it was about the dads, and he talked about, you know, in the tombstone, you know, there's when you're born in the beginning, and then there's when you pass away. He said, but in between, there's the dash, and the dash was like the symbolism of the legacy in which you in which your life was while you were here. And so by you mentioning that, I just thought about that, you know, when you get to you can get to a place where you can celebrate, you know, the legacy of a person and all those positive memories and those great experiences that you were privileged to encounter and to have because of a person or persons who have touched, you've encountered it in your lifespan. And in that moment of being thankful for the opportunity to share, you know, life with those people and to be a partaker in their legacy. And you know, little things, whether it's, you know, the values and principles you may have obtained, like you said, those loving moments, that whether it's holidays, trips, and various things that you have, even relationships that you have today that have factored into your relationship with the loved ones that passed away, and how they may have contributed to those relationships today. Being able to go ahead. I'm sorry. You broke up.
So I just wanted to pipe in real quick that you get to the point where you feel lucky that you had that experience with them. At least you had something other than nothing. So.
Yeah, I agree that, like you said, that time in which you were afforded to spend with them is amazing. I think I reflect on, for example, my best friend that passed at 12, leukemia. I think about, you know, growing up in one of the toughest parts of the Chicagoland area, and the fact that he grew up with a lot of brothers, and because he had brothers, you know, like five brothers, you know, I, as an only child at the time, inherited his brothers and inherited his family because we were like brothers. We considered ourselves brothers as friends, and so part of that legacy was an extension. I was able to extend my family through my friend and inherit a new set of brothers, you know, and go and be transferred from, you know, being that isolated, you know, child who was the only child to now experiencing brotherhood, which I as a kid, I desired that. And so, that's one positive memory that I could think of and part of the legacy of one of my close friends. And then I think about my aunt, for example, and one of the moments that stands out regarding my aunt is that I learned how to ride a bike at my aunt's house. And she was a contributor into encouraging me to learn how to ride as a kid because I was struggling. I was struggling to ride the bike. I pretty much couldn't ride the bike to save my life. And so I remember her taking me aside one day after me being frustrated and feeling down as a kid. And she told me, as she pulled me to the side, that before I left her house, I would know how to ride a bike. And that actually came true. You know, before I went back home, because I spent a week there, before I went back home, I did learn how to ride a bike. And so that's one of those moments in time that, for me, continues to stand out to this day, because it was one of those moments where you say, wow, you know, somebody told me, you know, my aunt told me I was going to learn, I learned. And, you know, that's huge, especially as a kid. Something like that is a real big deal, you know.
That story makes me smile, definitely. In a world of instant gratification and everybody always wants to be so entertained, it's really, you have to sit back and kind of reflect that sometimes it's the most smallest little things that, smallest little memories that make you the happiest when you're all by yourself or, you know, in a situation just where you're thinking back on different times of your life. It's those little memories that really outshine some of the other things that you've done in your life that were, you might have thought, you know, at the time were more exciting, but they really weren't. It's the small things that really count.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I got to throw one more in there. One more is I think about my mom and before she passed away. And one of the key things I think about with regards to my mother, who did marry my dad, but she was a single mother. She ended up raising me by herself because, you know, my pops, he left when I was a baby. I know my dad and all that, but that's another story. So one of the things I think about with my mom is how, which is unique to me in some cases for single, as a single mother, what she decided to do was she refused to allow me to grow up as a guy who would have that excuse of not having a relationship with males and not understanding manhood. So two things that she did. One was she put me in a program that was called a manhood program where I was around elders and guys, and they had a curriculum and all these great things, and I built relationships with other guys, young guys at the time. But another thing that really, really stands out are the beautiful jewels, the lessons she taught me as a young man about how a woman and how to treat my wife, how to be. You know, as a kid, she taught me what side of the street to walk on with a lady, and made me practice it all the time with her. And she would show me how to pull up a chair and for a woman and open the door and force me to talk about certain characteristics and qualities to look for. And she would express to me great qualities and also teach me on treatment, how to treat people, how to interact, how to be affectionate, how, you know, all these wonderful jewels, because she felt like, you know, he needs to know these things so that when he encounters a young lady, he will be prepared for it. And that's just one example. So that memory for me really stands out because, you know, it's from what I've heard in my encounters with other guys, it's something that I don't hear many guys talk about. I don't hear a lot of guys say, you know, my mom taught me how to interact with women and how to open up the door. I don't hear that often with guys who come up. But so I appreciate that my mother was very intentional about teaching me these principles as a child. You know, because they say you train up a child in the ways he should go, and so she decided, you know, to teach me those jewels early on in life. And then she didn't accept the fact that she may not have had certain things, like she wasn't a man. That's a reality. But she decided to register me. And I remember the center. It was a center of a guy by the name of Dr. Kwanza Kunjufu, an author, a psychologist, a doctor, who set up this center at a place called African Images. And they would teach, you know, young African-American males, you know, manhood and how to be citizens, how to take care of your household, the importance of your chores and finances and a whole bunch of things, entrepreneurship, how to use education for entrepreneurship and not think of education as just to get a new job. And, you know, all these different fruit and different valuable things. And I see somebody else has called in, so I want to open up their line. Your line is open, caller.
Hello. Great show, like usual, yeah. Stanley. Great show, like usual. I'm listening to what you're saying. I hope that your mom didn't just teach you, yes, to open doors and things like that, but also taught you to basically love yourself as a man and also be careful of women who doesn't deserve opening the door and all that. Because that's another part I feel a lot of mothers forget to teach their son. They teach their son all the great things that women have, but they don't teach their son all the bad things that a woman can do to a man. Like, and I feel a lot of mothers teach their daughters all the bad things a man could do, and none of the, and they teach their daughters all the great things that they are, but they didn't teach that. But as men, we never get to teach that. Never. Not a mother does that. It's very rare I hear a mother saying to a woman, "You're not going to talk that way to my son because he doesn't deserve to be talked that way." What I hear usually from mothers is, "You're she talked to you that way, or she did that to you. You must have done something that made her do that." And that's something that I don't agree. Sometimes it's not the son who did something. Sometimes it's the girlfriend, the wife, and sometimes the mother would need to basically be honest and not always put it on the man, because sometimes it's not the man's fault.
Oh, yeah, I definitely hear what you're saying. And, you know, one thing I appreciated about my mom is my mom was old school, and I know a lot of people say that, and it's very cliche-ish. But what I mean by old school, she was old school in a way that, number one, she never, ever, ever, ever spoke ill of my father. She allowed me to build my own relationship with my dad and discover for myself, you know, who he is and what he means to me. She made sure that you know, we stayed connected, and that was important. She also never sugarcoated things about men or women. So she didn't pretend as though all women were like these cookie cutter perfect people. She mm-hmm. made sure I understood that there's a difference between, you know, what some would call
like,
rat and bust down,
yeah.
and
yeah,
all
there's
those
a
things.
Difference
but
between
then
the
also
yeah. Yeah.
also
yeah.
classy
yeah.
and you know in,
yeah.
in educated, well informed women who you know who aren't. You know, malicious or anything like that. So she was very, very aware because her father and mom had that type of household where they definitely where she grew up with them both, and they and she got a chance to see that, you know, obviously all guys aren't the same. Granddad, incredible guy, And my grandmother, incredible woman. So she got a chance to see those people model some quality examples. And so, but yeah, so growing up around my mom and aunts, and I still have my granddad, you know, I didn't get the, you know, they didn't do cookie cutter. I'll say that. That was definitely not what they did, especially, you know, my grandparents are Southerners, you know, Mississippi. You know, Jackson and Mount Bio, and so, you know, they definitely made sure that I was informed. And in going to the, you know, that the class with the males, you know, the Dr. Kwanza Kanjufu's African images, that also played a key role, because that was the component where, you know, she actually put me in a position to hear directly from men. Like, look, I'm not going to tell you how to be a man. I'll give you some principles and things that I know, but you still need to know from a man what a man is. So she made sure that she positioned me to get that information also from men like my grandfather, other mentors, and places like, you know, like that particular, you know, organization. So no,
and you're very lucky to have had all that, because I feel in our generation, 2014, that men are missing that. Women, yeah, maybe there's some issue, but the manhood side, the man of being man, a lot of boys don't know how to be man. A lot of men don't even know how to be man.
Right.
They didn't get that education. They didn't get the self-respect that you need to have a man. They didn't get that. Look. Didn't get all this. I've seen so many men getting put down and treated like nothing. And saying, I should accept it.
think everybody has different situations that they're in, but as far as people dealing with grief and everything, we all have to step in as a community and make sure that young people are being raised right and, you know, taught things. It sounds like your mother had a great integrity and would sound like a very classy lady. I would like to touch base, too, on the fact that not only that was great that you had that class to go to where there, you had mentors, women, well, young girls need that, too, because if, you know, there are situations with a young girl, if she had an older brother to stick up for her or, you know, a male figure to say, you know, like a dad, if the dad's not there or nor, you know, an older brother, you know, when she's getting picked on or later on in life when she's dating someone that's not doing her right, someone needs to step in. And if there's no one there, it just, it's really sad for the girls. I think there should be some sort of organization, and I'm sure there is, maybe I'm not aware of it, that helps young girls have...
But don't you think that we live in more in generation that's more pro-feminine? This, if we go to all the way to the shows that we see in TV and everything, it's always pro-feminine. Pro, I never see a show, I rarely, when was the last time we see the Cosby Show, if you want to make it so straight? When was the last time we saw that kind of show? A strong woman and a strong man who respect each other, who respect each other's boundaries and everything, who has that respect. We don't see that. We see always a very strong woman and a weak-ass man that is basically accepting, oh, yes, put me down and it's okay. From I Love Raymond to many shows that we could go through. We don't see the Cosby Show type of man. We don't see that anymore. We don't see that example. And if we don't see that example, many men think, hey, it's normal that my girlfriend does that. Hey, it's normal that she talks that way. It's normal this. And women, a lot of, I'm sorry to say, they used to be a grandma or a mother that would tell women, you need to do this. There's some stuff you did that was wrong. We don't hear that. We hear a lot of women covering each other up of things that say, oh, it's not her fault. Oh, when is accountability coming in? Because definitely we have a problem. We used to be the nation that used to get married most. 70% of black women are not getting married. And that is not from me. It's not getting better.
Right.
There's definitely a problem. We used to be the nation that was the number one couple. We used to be the nation that was black men and black women were so tight, you couldn't separate us. What happened? We don't have that anymore. Go ahead.
I believe roles have changed, and that's a shame that it's not like that anymore. There's maybe not as much structure in the relationships. I really don't have the answer for that.
Because when you're talking about this, I'm sorry, Cosby Shows. If I show that to kid right now, they look at me and say, when was that happening? If I show them showed what is a mind and everything, yes, open door. But there was a way you would do those things because women and men had standard that they would respect and they knew what to do. And if you would not do what you needed to do, a woman or a man would straighten you up and tell you, as a woman or a man, you did wrong. We didn't sugarcoat it. And I feel that our generation sugarcoat things. Don't tell the truth about things. That if you're a single mother and you have three kids from three baby daddy, it's not good. It's not something that you're supposed to be proud of. It's not something that you're supposed to be covering up. It's not something that you're supposed to be kumbaya about.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying, and it sounds like you're going into the direction of tomorrow's show, actually, which deals with household culture, and it focuses on, tomorrow we're going to focus on, you know, upbringing and how, you know, the household, the culture that is created in our households really is what translates into the world and what we see demonstrated, whether it's in the media, whether it's in politics, what you're witnessing is what's being made in the households, in our households. So although our households may vary, which is really what separates everybody, is not. I don't think it's really the skin, the melanin or whatnot. But I definitely think how people are raised in their household and that culture is really what separates everybody, in my personal opinion. And I definitely want to go into that more in depth, and we will do that on tomorrow's broadcast at 2 p.m. Central Time. That's also I believe 3 p.m. Eastern, and that's like 12 noon Pacific. I believe. But yeah, you raised some very, very key questions. That I wish we had enough time to really analyze and dig into them. But the show is definitely coming to a close as we speak. If you guys have any closing remarks, please, you are more than welcome to do that at this time. You don't have to rush. So just share what you guys want to
share. I'll let the lady go, the angels in first. Go ahead. Is the lady there?
Yeah, I think so.
I have my button on. I'm sorry. I
said you go first.
I think it's important that that everybody together, as far as when something bad happens, that you come together instead of pulling apart, and you try to be compassionate and think of other ones' feelings about what they're going through, and that way that there's not so much division in families, and that way everybody does stick together and everybody does, help take it, do what they're supposed to do as far as different roles and helping people.
Did she have a problem with the phone?
I'm not sure. I think her phone might have been, the volume might have been low, but I know her call has dropped, though.
Okay, well, I would finish on to say to people, like she said, yes, people need to stick back together, but I think people need to go back to the basic when it comes either to relationship, things like that, and a lot of people forget that basic. I think in my life, the basics, and I still remember my mom told me that, respect, honesty, and trust. If you don't have that on your relationship, you need to sit down with your partner and find out what is the basic, because a lot of couples don't have even that. And how can you bring a kid or anything in this world if you don't even have that part? We need to go back to basics. We need to go back to be givers. We need to go back to be people that used to say to another person, if you see greatness on another person, see them, encourage them, and decide. We need to be givers, not just takers. A lot of people are, too much people are takers in relationship. Too much people want to trade. Having a relationship is not trading. Having a relationship is giving the best that you got to get in your heart, that you feel that you have in your heart, to give it to another human being. That's loving somebody and expect and maybe letting that person love you also. Too many people are afraid of the past. You got to get over that. It's not because 10 guys or 5 guys or whatever hurt you, or it's not because 5 girls hurt you that this number 6 is going to be the one that's going to hurt you. Every person is different. Every situation in every relationship, don't make somebody else pay for the past relationship that you have or the past relationship that she has. Every person is new, and you should give it a new slate, and don't make them go through 2,000 tests, which a lot of people do. That comes to fear. People are afraid of giving, and you shouldn't. You shouldn't. That's the only thing I would say. Definitely going to call in tomorrow for this show, because we definitely need to talk about all this stuff, because it really intrigued me when I see as a society where we've been, black people or other race also. I'm not just talking about black, but I think that the division between men and women is getting bigger and bigger, and I don't know why. That's the question.
Oh, man, we definitely appreciate it. What's your name again, Carla?
Stanley,
okay, thank you, man. I appreciate you, Stanley, for calling in. I look forward to you bringing in all that, all your wisdom and your insight for tomorrow's show, which is household culture incubators of our consciousness. We definitely want to get into that and see, like he said, what direction are we headed? Why are we dealing with such an alarmingly drop in marriages? What's going on with some of the dysfunctionality in some families today? And many, many, many more questions we're going to attempt to answer, not only for civilization, you know, humanity in general, but we definitely can't talk about, you know, civilization in general, humanity in general, without touching on the African American family. So we definitely got to talk about, you know, the family as a whole and that entire structure. I mean, it's only right that we do it. And we're going to go in very, very in-depth tomorrow. I hope you guys come back to get involved in that portion of the show because we're really going to spend that entire show really asking those questions and attempting to answering them and bringing about some solutions. So love and hugs to everyone in the chat room, on the phone lines, and all of you subscribers and archivers of the show. You know, without you guys, none of this would be possible. And remember to come back and tune in tomorrow, same time, same BTR channel. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we will see you tomorrow, Tuesday. So that's it. Show's over. Close the curtains, exit the building, another chapter in the book. Until next time, have a joyous and peaceful day, and remember to continue to be awesome.